Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Crash Course Fashion Podcast. My name is Brittany Sierra and I'm your host. Today's episode is really special for a number of reasons. Number one, it's a new episode and I don't even know how long. So many of you have told me how much you miss the podcast and how you want us to bring it back. And I hear you. I appreciate you. I think one of the challenging things, which we kind of dive into this in this episode, is that the Sustainable Fashion Forum is a very small team. And so managing multiple projects can be pretty challenging when you don't have proper team to be able to do all of the things. And so right now I'm the one recording, producing, editing, all of the things, which can be difficult, but we're definitely wanting to bring the podcast back and are looking into growing our team and building our team and building out the financial infrastructure for the podcast, which is major. So hopefully soon you'll see us back in your podcast queue. But for now, I'm really excited about this episode. This episode was actually filmed live in the Neiman Marcus in Austin, Texas, after our 2024 Sustainable Fashion Forum conference, which was just last week, which is wild to think about. Today on the podcast, we have Adam Taubenfliegel, the co-founder of Triarchy Denim and a new friend of mine. I've known Adam for quite some, like a few years now. I think since COVID, I've known Adam and have talked with him on Zoom, and he's been a part of our conference, but this was my first time meeting him in person, and he is an incredible human, and I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm so excited to share it with y'all. In this episode, we talk about a really incredible project that Triarchy has been a part of that involves tomatoes, and we have a very real conversation about entrepreneurship and partnership. So let's get into it. So first things first, there's been a lot of really cool things happening in the Triarchy world. Can you share a bit about like what's been going on, what y'all have been up to, and just all the things?
I was just saying that I've been on an Earth Month tour that started in New York last week, where we did an activation with Bergdorf Goodman around the project that we just did for our plastic-free stretch denim. And long story short on that is we brought to market the world's first plastic-free stretch.
Incredible.
As a vehicle to move the denim industry away from its dependence on crude oil-based plastics. And in the soil tests of the decomposition of that fabric to see what that looked like from a technical side, it was found that the fabric was actually contributing to soil health.
Wow.
And so when we were seeing those results, the denim mill and their friends at Quinto Sapore, which is a farm in Italy, they decided, why don't we try to grow a crop of tomatoes using the denim scraps to cultivate the soil? And so they did that and brought to harvest tomatoes, which were then turned into tomato sauce.
Wow.
Which were then served as dinner at the Green Carpet Fashion Awards, which we were a sponsor of. And so we then decided to tell that story with Bergdorf Goodman on the floor. So last week, the day before yesterday, we had tomato plants on the denim floor, and we had an event where people came and we served hors d'oeuvres made from the tomato sauce that was grown using our denim. And it was a real incredible way to show full circularity on the consumer floor. And I think it's something that's never been done before, and it really was received that way.
Yeah, I mean, this project is so cool for so many different reasons, and I really want to dive into more of the specifics. But for some reason, I thought y'all made spaghetti. Am I maybe I'm just hungry?
At the Green Carpet Fashion Awards, it was spaghetti. We made a pasta and used the tomato sauce as the pasta sauce. But then for Bergdorf Goodman, the chef put together smaller bites because we can't really serve spaghetti on the denim floor, so more of just finger foods using the tomato sauce as an ingredient.
I love this project for so many different reasons. Number one, it's incredible that y'all were able to make a plastic-free stretched denim. Like, that is an accomplishment in and of itself. And it's also incredible that the materials from this denim were able to support growth of crops, and even, you know, it's the fact that it supported soil health is just wild. But then to take it a step further and actually create a sauce out of it and to create meals out of it, I mean, I keep saying incredible, but honestly, like, that's just the word that comes to mind, is just incredible. And my background is in marketing and in storytelling. So for me, those are two areas that I really geek out on. There's just such an incredible story around what y'all did here. I'm curious, how did this project come about?
It was really, this is such a beautiful story because the initial goal was just, let's find an alternative to plastic for Stretch. That was it. It was just, there's such a dependence on crude oil-based fibers in the fashion industry. The denim industry is abhorrently dependent on plastics. I say that really most pair of jeans that we see in their DNA resemble a plastic bag more than a pair of jeans. So that was what we set out to do, is just how do we make a plastic-free alternative? But then in each step of discovering what that looks like and how that actually helps and what are all the parameters that go into this and the end of life of the fabric, it's when we started discovering all these things, like the contribution to soil health. And then there's a group of people thinking, well, if it's contributing to soil health, doesn't that mean that it would contribute to the growth of plants? And let's see what that looks like. And then when they were doing that, they also realized that the denim scraps being in the soil, not only was it contributing to soil health in its organic, because it's an organic matter, it was also retaining a lot of water because it's fabric. So the crops were using so much less water as well to grow. And there's another benefit and another benefit. And then, of course, we don't expect anyone to plant their jeans and grow tomatoes. But the point is that, you know, we're in Neiman Marcus right now. Everything in this store at one point in time will end up back in the ground. At one point. Long time away, short time away, whatever. But the point is, if we take into account what that looks like when that day comes, we can contribute to soil health at that end of life instead of toxifying.
Yeah, for sure. And is this something that has been Triarchy's focus since its inception, or is this something that y'all have grown into?
I think the beautiful thing about the Triarchy journey is my brother and sister and I started the brand as a denim brand. And then after a year or two, when growth was happening and we saw all the irresponsible practices that had to be employed in order to grow, it became apparent that the world doesn't need another denim brand. So if we were going to do this, it should probably be a vehicle to make jeans better. So we took the brand offline and we spent a year doing a deep dive on what sustainability meant, and then brought the line back to market in 2018 as that vehicle. But the point is we never intended any of this from the outset. We just decided to go in that direction, and then all of these things started presenting themselves, and they continue to present themselves as we go along. 4 years ago, when we eradicated plastic from the brand, we didn't have an alternative. But then it comes, and you find people that are working on it, and then, you know, tomatoes eventually. But the point is that I have no idea where we'll be in a year, but I feel very optimistic about it because these amazing solutions keep presenting themselves because like-minded people are focused on that goal.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But has it always been so easy, though? Because like you said, like-minded people are thinking about different solutions and are thinking about different ways of producing and manufacturing fashion. And it sounds like what you're saying, that solutions are almost falling into your lap. Is it always so easy?
It's funny because I think I feel as though these solutions always fall into my lap, but the reality is there's so much hard work that goes into finding them. So I think you really have to be determined not to cut corners and not to, you know, let's do 25 to 50% of the brand in a responsible way. And, you know, the other 50%, we can't really do it, but we'll use the marketing from the 50% where we are doing it right, and then we'll work towards it. We don't operate like that. If we can't make it responsibly, we don't make it. And so I think that is probably one of the hardest things for a brand to do, is really just say, no, I'm not going to do it. And so often we'll design something and I'll look at it and love it and the team loves it. And then when I go into the development, I say, there's no way to make this responsibly. So at that point, we don't have a conversation that looks like, okay, well, that's all right, because we're doing good with the rest of the stuff. We cut it, and it's gone. because it doesn't need to exist.
I think that speaks volumes to your values as a brand, because there definitely are brands out there, companies out there that, because they are making, you know, X, Y, and Z more responsibly, then it doesn't matter that A, B, and C aren't being made responsibly. And so I think the fact that you just cut it, if it doesn't meet the standards, it doesn't meet your values, that you just cut it all together, speaks volumes. And again, I keep coming back to this word incredible, but you know, I am curious though, like how this dedication in sustainability or in responsibility translates to transparency. I know, like with larger, you know, companies, it's often really challenging for them to maintain the transparency across their supply chain because, you know, there's so many moving pieces. But as a smaller brand, do you find that you have more control over shaping your supply chain because it's a lot smaller?
Absolutely. I think we have a lot working in our favor because of the size of our company. I definitely feel, obviously, the bigger you get, the more supply chains you have, the more difficult it becomes to track all of that. I always say that a brand can't be trusted to speak on behalf of themselves. I think that's why we have greenwashing, because the truth is everything that I'm saying to you on this podcast could be a lie. We don't know that. It's not, but it could be. And so the point is that everything that I say we do has to be vetted by a third-party auditor. And so we work with Renoon on that to take all of the information from all of our supply chains for all of our products and calculate all of the outputs from those things. And then each garment that Triarchy sells has a unique QR code inside of it that you can scan, and you can go on a journey and see where the cotton was grown. You can download the organic cotton certificates. You can see where our factory is. You can see the wash processes. You can see the carbon offset projects that we give back to. It's a real level of radical transparency that is imperative if you're using the S word. You can't not provide that. And again, though, with the size of the company, it does make it easier. But at the same time, we work with a few vendors. We stick with those vendors. And when we find fabrics that work, we just keep using them. I don't change fabrics every season because that's what fashion says we should do.
Absolutely. And I mean, I feel like that is the biggest challenge, right? Is when you're a smaller brand, you have access and understanding of exactly what's happening in your supply chain. And as you grow, that level of transparency decreases as there are more, you know, I guess, players or more pieces that are being added to the puzzle. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on growth. And I'd love to circle back to that question, actually, and talk about like where you see the Triarchy brand growing. but I guess as far as transparency, like how do you look at that? How do you think about transparency as you grow your brand?
I think we have that working in our favor because we built it into the DNA from the beginning. So for us to scale that now is very straightforward. It's simple. We know the processes. We know what goes into making sure that the auditing is in place for all products. We have someone who oversees it. So if I was to plug in more products and more supply chains, we know how to do it. I think if you're trying to retroactively set that up in a huge operation, it would be like trying to untangle a spider's web. So the size of the company does help. It's not impossible, but it makes it easier.
Yeah, for sure. And what are your thoughts on growth? I know that it seems like every founder sort of has a different view on this. Some people want to be the biggest of biggest, and some people want to stay small. What are your thoughts on growth for Triarchy?
You know, in full transparency and vulnerability, we've gotten as far as we can get to on our own. We haven't taken on external investment, which is kind of a miracle that we've been able to get to where we are. But you get to a point now where you do have to look at what you're asking me and say, what size of a company do we want this to be? The reality is the amount of people it takes to operate a brand like Triarchy, it's a lot of people, and a lot of people have lives, and those lives need salaries, and people have to be able to look after their families and things like that. And when I look at the denim industry as a whole, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. So there's room in the pie for Triarchy to take a share of that and then be one of those denim brands that when you walk into a store like Neiman Marcus and you see those five big brands on the wall, it would be really nice for Triarchy to be one of those brands and for a customer to trust the responsibility behind that brand and then also to inspire the other four brands that are on that wall to move in that direction too. And then collectively, we can scale those resources, bring the costs down, and make it accessible to everybody. So as much as for my own personal benefit of wanting the brand to grow, it's also the only thing that will pivot the industry away from the irresponsible dependencies that it is in.
Mm-hmm. So Triarchy is seeking funding for growth.
We are currently in the process of going after our first raise. We started this back in September. That's when we started, you know, building the investment deck and then learning about what the investment world looks like and what different types of investment opportunities there are in venture capital and impact investing and what it all looks like. And it's a whole new world out there.
Oh, I bet.
And it's a tough one to navigate. And, you know, in as much as how Triarchy is doing denim differently and building a sustainable business differently, the investment that finds us also has to be different. Mm. The traditional ways of investing don't look at Triarchy and think, oh yeah, let's tell me more. They skip all past all of our practices and they look at the charts and they see money in, money out. When are we getting the investment back? When are we making this? When are we making that? And I think the type of investor that would come on to support a brand like ours understands that the return will take a little longer. But at the other side of getting that return back, you've also cultivated a completely new way of doing business. Mm. And there are investors like that out there. And those are who we're looking for. Ones that get the model is different. The same way that I got that our model has to be different in building this business.
Oh, absolutely. Finding the right partner is definitely really important, especially as a brand that's focused on sustainability. And, you know, we hear that a lot from the bigger brands and their challenges with moving into responsibility and sustainability is that they are trying to balance that profit and that purpose. And a lot of times because of the folks that are invested in the company, you know, the profit comes first. I'm curious though, because funding is something that I've been thinking about for the Sustainable Fashion Forum. What are some things that you have learned since dipping your toe into the investment pool and learning more about what's out there?
What I've learned is that investment is a, you know, I'm laughing because I think laughter is my natural reaction to pain.
I feel that.
It's you know, going after investment is like a whole full-time job, really. I built the investment deck myself with my team. You know, it was 60 pages long at the outset. And then I start showing it to people and they're like, what is this? I need 10 to 15 pages max. And I'm like, how do I distill 60 pages into 10? This is insane. Like, but people, you know, are going through decks multiple times a day and you have to just be able to get the pertinent points in front of them. We're working with a couple people who are really helping us to refine that voice and refine that direction. And I think doing things like the event at Bergdorf Goodman and being part of the Green Carpet Fashion Awards, which is obviously a very high profile event, that I think when you can show investors things like this, it really legitimizes the business and it shows them that you can't be included in things like this if you're not really walking the walk. And so I think the validation that putting our time and focus into doing events like this does for us is it really legitimizes the business and the direction, and hopefully we'll take some of those walls down, because like I said, with investment, it's just skip to the spreadsheet. And I get it, because every business is a business first and foremost. So all the wonderful things we're talking about, plastic-free stretch, tomatoes, and whatever comes in between, it all has to be a business that works. And it's a really tough balance making sure that happens. And then finding somebody who cares about the balance and not just the spreadsheet.
Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting to me, because at the Sustainable Fashion Forum, our annual conference, I guess that was literally just yesterday. Time feels like it's just I don't even know right now, but yesterday we were just talking about, you know, this fact of businesses have to make money in order to remain a business. And this is true for sustainably focused, responsible brands and brands that aren't sustainably focused. But the bottom line is, in order to remain in business, businesses have to make money.
Absolutely.
And I've noticed that when brands that are more sustainably focused do things that the sustainable fashion community thinks is outside of the scope of what a sustainable quote unquote brand should be doing, they will quickly call them out for greenwashing. But again, not to sound like a broken record here, but whether you are a responsible brand or not, you still have to make money. And some of these basic business things, necessities, still have to happen. And in this case, as you said, or as you mentioned, in order for a triarchy to continue to be a solution, in order for a triarchy to continue to provide the world with plastic-free stretch denim, you need funding and you need that support.
Absolutely.
So I guess I'm just curious, have you thought through what that communication is going to look like to your community around investment, getting investment, what that looks like for the future of triarchy, or what will change, what won't change? Like, have you thought through that piece of the conversation yet?
I think, you know, a lot of the times people will look at triarchy externally and it looks like we're this big brand doing these big things. And the reality is we're a team of less than 12 people. Half of us are actual family and the rest of us are chosen family. And we're an incredibly scrappy, hardworking group of people that put in way more time than I have the ability to value them for. But of course you have to present yourself in a way commercially that looks like, oh yeah, we got this figured out. All good. Which is, you know, I can't speak to any other brand, but that's certainly not the case for us. Every day is a new set of challenges. And I do think there's something really beautiful. And I think you're helping me to actually say it out loud is just being vulnerable with where we're actually at and who we are. And I think our the person who's been doing our social media, Jessica, has always been telling me that you and your sister need to be more the face of the brand. Tell stories on Instagram, make it more personal, to which I was always pushing back and saying, I don't want to do that. I hate that. I hate that. But it's important to show people that there are people behind it and that these people work really hard and that we're not backed by a huge company and we're not part of an umbrella of companies. We're a family business trying to actually do something different. And so I think in your question, it's nice because I don't often get asked that and I don't often get to talk like this because it is more the like, oh, what was that activation at Bergdorf Goodman? Fabulous. What's next? What's this? What's that? And you're just making it sound like all is good. We're growing. And it's all is not good. No. I think maybe that's a part of this whole situation that I haven't plugged into. You have sustainable brand building. You have to look for an impact investor who cares about a purpose-driven brand. And maybe the way you find that person is through vulnerability and the way that we're talking right now.
Absolutely. I mean, this is something that I have been thinking about a lot with the Sustainable Fashion Forum. We have big goals of being a media platform. I mean, I could talk for days about all the different things that we want to do. And when I look out at the landscape and I look at other media platforms that are in this space, they're all run in a very similar way. And there may be a founder, but the founder shows up in a very particular way. And so for me, I guess I always just sort of felt like that was the way that I needed to show up as well. And the way that I needed to present the Sustainable Fashion Forum as well. And the reality is these other platforms have immensely different support systems. They have different funding. They have different connections. And those are things that the Sustainable Fashion Forum currently doesn't have. And so to try to show up in the same way was very taxing and very challenging and very hard and very exhausting, if I'm being completely honest, to pretend as though everything is together when the reality it's not. But you feel like you have to in order to be taken seriously or in Absolutely. Order for people to want to be a part of what you're doing. Like you feel like you have to put off this facade as though everything is together and it's not. But something that I mean is so obvious, but it just like has come to me recently is like no one knows that you need help unless you say something. If you're putting on this facade of, oh, I have it together, oh, everything is great, you know, we're doing great, we're doing fine, no one knows that you need help. And therefore, you're not going to receive any help, or you're less likely to receive help.
I absolutely love where this conversation is going, because that has been the main thing on my mind in 2024. Why do we have to build businesses and pretend as though they are like the businesses that we have built our businesses not to be like?
Mic drop.
That's one of the most important things that has ever come out of my mouth, I think, for myself. But it's true. We build businesses to make them look like the businesses that we built our businesses to not be.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like we build our businesses to disrupt the industry, but then somewhere along the line, we are trying to mold our businesses into being exactly what we are trying to disrupt so that we fit into. It doesn't make sense.
And then what you said, how would anyone know that you need help if you're constantly just like, oh yeah, everything's great. Look at the brand. Look at the brand. Look at the brand. There's actually something more beautiful about a brand. And I know I'm very biased and I'm speaking for myself, but for Triarchy to have just had an event at Bergdorf Goodman in New York, and also to be talking to you like this today about the realities of what that really looks like. Not just like everything's fabulous. Fashion, New York, Bergdorf Goodman, tomatoes. Great. What's next? That's not.
Yeah, for sure. And like I've noticed, I've been kind of playing around with it on LinkedIn, and I've been more sharing more things, not everything, but I've been sharing more things. And certainly after this last conference, like sharing with my community, just more about the inner workings of SFF and how we intend to grow and whatnot. And I've always seen that it's been positive. Like whenever I share real feelings that I'm experiencing as an entrepreneur, as the leader of the Sustainable Fashion Forum, I've very rarely ever had negative experiences. It's all been really great and really, and people have been super supportive. So I don't know why I still feel like I have to put on this facade, because the data, you know, for those who like data, has shown that being vulnerable and being honest has only resulted in positivity. But we still feel this need to put on this front. And it's so interesting too, because when you have one-on-one conversations with people, it always comes out, you know, like the realness always, well, not always, but most times, you know, it comes out that we're all experiencing different things. We're all going through our own challenges. But then for some reason, when we get on the internet or when we get in, you know, maybe events and things like that, we are like, oh yes, I'm doing XYZ thing. And it's so great. And I just wonder what would happen if we were all just real. Like, can we all just be real and stop putting on this facade? Because so many of us are experiencing similar things. What would happen if we were all just real and then came together and built on the gaps?
I just think that if this podcast could act as that call, that would be so beautiful. And I know I've said it twice already, but I'm so happy about the direction that this conversation took, because it is the realest conversation I've had. And I'm so happy that I came to Austin to talk to you. Yeah, really. Like, I got emotional when we were talking and when I was telling you about the team and like how small we are and how hard it is. And I actually am like we work so hard, this team. It's nuts. And it is so difficult to balance like books and production. And when you don't have logistics and you don't have different departments, like everyone on this team wears the hat of three or four departments. Like our product development is two people. Usually you have someone for wash, someone for tech, someone for pattern, someone for this, someone for that. You know, teams. It's two of us.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even express to you like how much I feel that. Like, this is something that I have been struggling with for so long. And I feel like it is finally sort of come to this place where it's like either it's we're going to find a solution or I just don't really know. I just don't really know. Because like with the Sustainable Fashion Forum, you know, we have 200,000 plus followers on Instagram. I think we have like 60,000 on LinkedIn. I have no idea. You know, we just have like a large platform overall. With our conferences, we have really, you know, big name brands that are coming and speaking. We have sponsors that are incredible. And from the outside looking in, there's this expectation of there being a team, of SFF having a team. And the reality is, on a good day, there's two of us with, you know, people coming in to support in different capacities. But on a good day, there's two of us, and most times it's just me. And the level of expectation that comes with having such a large platform is really challenging to live up to, because you have all this expectation of this is a massive platform, like you should have this ability, you should have team, blah blah blah. But then the reality is that we don't have that.
I feel that.
So, you know, that's the challenge on the one hand. And then the other side of it is, you know, building the team. And I mean, that's like a whole different other story and conversation and podcast episode about support of the industry, sponsorship, partnership. And that's just a whole nother story. But I feel like, you know, what's challenging with SFF is, I mean, I have been doing this for 8 years now, and I have been putting everything into it, everything, like literally everything that I have into it, emotionally, mentally, physically, like everything. And it's exhausting. It really, truly is exhausting.
I feel that.
I mean, I don't even have a question or anything with that. It's just a statement of just...
You know how many times I get DMs from people saying, oh my God, you're killing it. I'm so proud. And this, which is great. And there are different levels of killing it. You know, actually, I do a tarot reading on every full moon. That's my personal night with myself or those that I'm closest with. I always pull cards and just have a moment. And one of the cards I pulled said something along the lines of, you've been working so hard for so long. Shouldn't you have reaped more rewards by now? Shouldn't you have reaped more rewards for all of your hard work by now? And then it said, maybe your rewards are waiting for you to recognize them. They're not always monetary. And I really sat with that for a while thinking, you know, there's sort of different lanes of this, because obviously the monetary one is very important and we all have bills to pay and that's a huge thing. So I'm not saying like, but it's important, I think, to give the energy to the lanes where you are killing it and you are doing really good, because even though it's a slow burn, I think that difficult business financial lane, it has to catch up with the other ones. I do believe in the world and I do believe in people and I do believe that support will catch up.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I definitely hope that it catches up as well. I feel like it's about time. So that would be awesome. I do feel like too, like kind of what I was saying earlier about giving everything to the SFF platform, I feel like somewhere along the line, I've like lost myself and I've lost my hobbies, for example. Like I have no idea what I like to do for fun. And like right now I'm really into consumer behavior and psychology and all of that stuff. And so I will be reading a book and come across something that is just like mind blowing for me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to tell the SFF community about this. So next thing you know, like I'm writing an article or I'm like making an Instagram carousel. And I'm like, okay, this is work. Like it's supposed to be like a hobby. It's supposed to be something fun. And here I am like, you know, telling everyone about it. So I feel like maybe I need to find a hobby that's not so closely related to what I do for work, but I don't know.
I know, but consumer behavior is the only topic of conversation that matters when it comes to sustainability.
I know, I'm obsessed.
It is the only thing that will make a difference. I can sit here and make plastic-free stretch jeans with little to no water washes and no chemicals and recycled metal buttons and QR codes and carbon offset givebacks and plant trees and grow tomatoes, and I can do it for the rest of my life, and it will not make a difference if people do not start owning their reaction to impulse and the speed at which they consume. That is what I have discovered in however many years that I've been doing sustainable fashion. It really has become clear to me that is the only thing that will make a difference. The odds are stacked against us because the platforms that have been invented that everybody consumes on, they are meant to be built as a machine for impulse. That's what it is. That's what we are faced with every day. And so if we can't control our reaction to impulse and we're just consuming at speeds that we can't even keep up with, we're just going to keep buying things we don't need with money we don't have, and brands like mine will never be able to scale. Period. End of story. So it's kind of a beautiful thing, though, because it really just comes back to you, the individual person. If you can take a step back and say, wait, this system is not built for my benefit. Why am I participating in it at such an abhorrent rate? It's crazy. I have a thing called the 5-minute rule where when I'm shopping in real life or online and I want to buy something, I put it down for 5 minutes, walk away, grab a coffee, do whatever. And then I come back, I let the dopamine rush pass. And then I'm not joking, 9 out of 10 times, I never transact. I never buy the thing because the dopamine passed and I'm like, I'm okay. It just happened in New York. I went in a store, I saw a t-shirt I loved. I was like, oh, I love this. I never love things. This is so great. I'm buying this. And then I was like, no, but you have to do your thing. So I put it down, walked around the store, checked out a couple installations, this and that. Went back, and then I was like, do you know how many t-shirts you have at home? I think you're good. And so, but there was a chance, a 1 out of 10 chance, that I would have been like, yeah, I love that. I'm going to get it. And then when I get that thing, I know I'm going to have it for a very long time. I'm going to love it. I'm going to wear it. And so it's just, you have to control your reaction to impulse, because your reaction to that creates your reality that then creates the reality of the planet that I know we all care about. And I know we're all struggling to figure out how to help. And what do we do? That's all you have to do. Let dopamine rushes pass and then make decisions. That's it. We solved the problem.
I love that. The five minute rule.
It's just that, individual interactions to impulses.
Mm.
It's really interesting when you do it, because it's almost a little disappointing, because it's obviously a really nice feeling when you see something you love and you get it and you're like, oh, I love, love, love all the things. And you stop really getting that. You replace it with a feeling of self-empowerment that's really, you become the captain of your own vessel and you really feel like you're in charge. You know, but you do miss out on that impulse, but then you also miss out on having a house full of things you don't need, use, or want.
I feel like what you just said right there is so incredibly powerful. Like, what if instead of chasing a dopamine rush, we're chasing feelings of empowerment?
Well, doesn't that sound beautiful? Replacing dopamine rush with empowerment. And just feeling like the boss of your own life and just making conscious decisions that you own and you get behind and you feel strong about and that you can talk about in that context. That's life.
Seriously, because these days I feel like, gosh, in so many different ways, our power is taken away from us, especially in fashion when you think about it, because there's so much psychology and manipulation happening and making us feel like we don't belong or like we don't have this or have that or are not good enough. And so we need to buy this cream in order to be beautiful, and we need to buy this outfit in order to be sexy, and we need to buy. We're manipulated in so many different ways into thinking that we need to have the next hottest whatever in order to be accepted. And then when you think about, you know, the world at large, there's just so much happening and so many ways our power is being taken away from us. And I wonder what would happen if we as a society searched for opportunities to feel empowered and how that would translate in business and how that would translate in relationships and how that would translate just in our world. If instead of searching for the next dopamine rush, which is fleeting and is not going to last, what if we searched for empowerment?
What could be more beautiful than what you just said? I think that empowerment is a very enticing state to be in. And I think that if that is something that everyone could get behind, their own personal empowerment, and just, I use this analogy a lot, but just being the captain of your own vessel. And the truth is, when you, I mean, I don't know, because I'm not the captain of a ship, but I would imagine that if you are the captain of a ship and you know that you're going to such and such port, you have to start steering days in advance, you know, getting, you're plotting your course to make sure you end up in the right place, taking into account currents and influences and winds and things. And we are all the captains of our own vessels, and we are all trying to get to somewhere that we all want to get to. And I would imagine that we all want to get somewhere good. And so every little decision we make, everything we buy and everything we eat and everything we do, those are all decisions that are steering our course. And it's so easy to get pushed off course and pushed off course and pushed off course. But after a while, you're in another ocean. And then how do you get back? But if you really just take that moment, that's why I think meditation is so important, because you have to get in touch inside. I used to not be able to be in my home without the television on. I would have to just have a movie playing, have something playing. Oh, I love movies. That's fun. You know, it's fine. But then I was like, why do you always have to have the TV on? Because I don't want to be alone with my thoughts. But then if you just really just, we're all the 5-year-old version of ourselves. We all are. And I think that's such an easy, that was such an easy way for me to make these changes, because the ways in which I would talk to myself that were demeaning, or the decisions that I would make about what I put into or onto my body, I would think, if I was with my 5-year-old self, would I do any of those things to that kid? Would I speak to them that way? Would I buy them that? Would I eat that? Would I let them eat that? If the answer to that question is no, it's pretty easy barometer to know what you should and shouldn't be doing. And I had a moment where I reconnected with my inner child, as cheesy as it sounds, and it was like waterworks. It was like crying and really just like, oh my God, you're still in there. This is amazing. And then you just, I really do defer back to that a lot. Wait, would I give 5-year-old Adam that? Like, yeah, okay, great, then do it. I do a lot of weird things like that. Yeah.
I'm noticing a trend here too, because there's the 5-minute rule, and then you have the, you know, would you or would you not with the 5-year-old self or with your 5-year-old self. So I'm noticing like a 5 trend here.
Oh, interesting. I've never thought about that, but you're right. It is the 5-minute rule, and it is talking to my 5-year-old self. Huh, that's so interesting. The power of 5. I don't know if maybe there should be 5 things. I'll think of 3 more.
All right. Well, while you think of 3 more, I'm curious. I wanted to circle back to the conversation we were having earlier about partnership. Because you mentioned, you know, working with Bergdorf Goodman and Neiman Marcus. And I'm curious, how do partnerships like that translate for small brands? Like, I know you're talking about investment and how it helps to legitimize the brand. But I'm curious, in what ways do partnerships like these help to grow the Triarchy brand? Or are they, dare I say, just for funsies and for show?
You could imagine that the ability to speak in the vast space of everyone yelling is really difficult. And so having partners that not only allow you to share that microphone, but that you can have a mutual trust in each other to do so, that's invaluable. And for Triarchy, the Neiman Marcus Group has been such a champion of us since the beginning. Really is incredible when they have initiatives as they do, such as Fashion for Change at Neiman Marcus and Conscious Curation at Bergdorf Goodman. What they're doing is they're creating brands within their spaces that allow customers to feel safe and informed about the practices that Triarchy works so hard to bring into initiatives like that. So it really is teamwork, and it's not teamwork for the sake of selling product, because the ESG departments at Neiman Marcus don't just take what I say at face value. when I provide information on collections, it needs to be backed up with certifications. It needs to be backed up with proof points. So they really are walking the walk, and they are doing the extension of our storytelling on the floor for the customer. And that's not something we could do as Trierkey, because when people discover Trierkey, they're discovering the brand for the first time. Neiman Marcus and Bergdorf Goodman, those are household names. And so a shopper walking into one of these stores or going onto the online version of them, they know the brand and they trust the brand, and there are reasons to do so. And so when you bring this next level of the conversation forward to the customer, it really is taking that wall down and extending that trust. But it's also showing to all the other brands that sell in these spaces, oh, wait, what is that edit? Why aren't we in that edit? What can we do to be in that edit? And so I would hope that it inspires people to change their practices so that at one point in time, the entire Neiman Marcus store will be fashion for change. The entire Bergdorf Goodman store will be conscious curation. It won't be a here's an installation on the fifth floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that. And you said that Neiman Marcus Group has been a partner of Trierkey since the beginning. So I'm curious, how did that begin? Did it start off with them carrying the line, or how did you build that relationship?
Initially, it began at Bergdorf Goodman. They were the first major to pick us up, which was
incredible.
And they're very near and dear to my heart because of that. My whole team knows how important Bergdorf's is to me. I say it a lot, but it was Bergdorf Goodman, and then Neiman Marcus came on board afterward. And, you know, the only point of contact that I have with these retailers at the beginning is the buyer. And so when we're working with buyers, there's a difference. There's some buyers that are just here for fashion, here for bottom line, what's going on. And then there are those that really sit and listen to the storytelling and see in the spaces that they're used to interacting that something different is happening here. And I would really like to bring this to the floor. And I know these buyers fight for us. I know that they go higher up and it's like, well, hold on. Like, what is this? What is this? Like, do these numbers make sense? And I know that they go to bat for us and say, no, this is the future. This is the direction we should be going. I really want to try it. And they do. And they gave us a chance. And it really, really touches my heart, truly, because like we've said before, this is business, and business is tough, and it's ruthless, and it's black and white, and like, you know, and in some places it's not like that. In some places there are other levels of care and respect and just mutual levels of integrity that allow both businesses to flourish.
Yeah. I mean, what you said there is really the key, is that a partnership that is benefiting both parties. I think that what's so challenging with partnerships often is that there's almost always a power dynamic where one has more power, more resources, more opportunity, more ability than the other. And so the challenge is often, how can you make it so that this partnership is truly of benefit to both sides of the equation and not just one? And how can you make it so that it's equitable for both? And I think also, how can you grow within that partnership? And how can you support someone as they are growing? Because I think that that's really important also, is that it's really easy to be someone's partner and support them when everything is great. But, you know, sometimes it's through that growth that you need the partnership the most. And so how can you be there for both? But it's really great to hear that Neiman Marcus Group has been such a great partner for Trierkey and for its growth. So we've talked about a lot of things in this episode, and I know that there were so many gems and so many mic drop moments, but if you had to pick one key takeaway from this conversation, what would it be?
I think it's really important to say that this is the realest conversation I've ever had.
Oh, thank you.
In all of the podcasts and interviews and things, and that's thanks to you being vulnerable and bringing out the vulnerability in me.
I appreciate that.
And all of these things we talk about, business and sustainability, and that's all available on the website, you know. But there's something you've uncovered something really beautiful here, that the people behind these projects, that is why we're here talking. And if I'm thinking about what I just said about the buyers at the stores, and then my team and the people at the select group of vendors that I work with, and then it's, they're all really good people, and they're working really hard, and they're trying to do something extremely different from the way that this world has been constructed when it comes to the spaces that we operate in, which is what you're doing as well. And I know we get a lot of support, and I know a lot of people care, but I think it's really important for everyone to acknowledge where they're at and to be real. And I, as much as this is about sustainability and practices, I think it's so much more about us as humans. And if I was to pick one thing from the conversation that I think is the most empowering thing, it's what we were talking about, that it all comes back to the individual. Because that is the only way that any of this change is actually going to take shape and businesses like mine will be able to scale, is if people actually stop reacting to impulses that allow them to consume all the things they don't need with the money they don't have. And there's so many companies that are dominating spaces that you and I operate out of that make so much money and give nothing back. And the fact that businesses like that are even allowed to operate is insane. But of course, these are the constructs we've built. We created these. This is the world, you know, we can't go back and wipe it all out and start again. But if you're going somewhere and interacting with something, and you know that that company is not providing anything back to anyone except the people taking your money, is that where your money should be going? Am I so naive? I don't think so. And so, fewer better things with conscious decision making and sleeping well at night. You know, I think that it will provide you with that. And there's nothing better than a good night's sleep.
Hell yeah.
I think owning that empowerment is something I really want to talk about more moving forward too. There is no greater feeling than being the boss of your own life. And it's a road to get there. But when you get there, it's bliss. And I really recommend.
I love that. Well, thanks so much, Adam. This was so much fun.
You too, really. Thank you.
As always, thanks so much for listening. And we'll be back with a new episode.